Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, welcome to the Anderson Business Advisor Podcast. This is Toby Mathis. I'm joined by Clay and Evan Manship from Indianapolis. Welcome, guys.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're going to have a little bit of fun today. What I always love is talking to people that have had success in real estate, or any business for that matter. I just like talking to people that have had success. But these guys come from Indianapolis, and I'm not going to steal your thunder. What do you guys do?
Our group, Main State Property Group, essentially serves as a financial advisor of sorts. We are much like a Raymond James or an Edward Jones or a Northwestern Mutual. However, we don't sell securities, bonds, and life insurance. You know, we are exclusive to selling Indianapolis real estate and consulting, coaching, advising through the process so that folks can achieve sexy returns in the Midwest.
Do you guys stick with just Indianapolis, or do you guys go outside and do anything else?
For the time being, yeah. And you know, we're strictly Indianapolis because we're born and bred in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. We went off to school in Cincinnati, about 2 hours east of Indy, and boomeranged right back. So we're born Indy, born and raised. It's what we know. It's what we're good at.
So you know the market, kind of.
Mildly, yes.
How many property transactions have you been involved in? I just want to give you these folks flavor.
Yeah, so we've been in business since 2014, and last we looked, it was just north of 1,200.
1,200 homes that you've been involved in the purchase.
On a purchase or sale, correct.
And you buy them yourselves, and then you guys fix them up and sell them off, or what do you do?
Yeah, you know, but by definition of what we do, they're wholesale transactions. We're buying for A, and we're selling for B. However, you know, our mantra is to make sure that we are providing value via the equity that we've been in the deal. Mm-hmm. Make sure that people can utilize our services from a construction standpoint, a procurement standpoint, and essentially have that product baked all in, whether it's 65, 70 cents on the dollar. Take the money back out and do it again.
All right. So this is the question everybody always wants to know. Is you probably didn't just one day wake up and say, I'm going to be in real estate. What brought you into real estate?
Yeah. So what brought us into real estate is kind of funny. I wanted to be an investment banker when I grew up. I always remember wanting to wear the suspenders and drive the Ferrari and make the millions of dollars a year.
Who does?
Yeah, right. It's still a good goal to have, I suppose. But we read a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and it's almost cliche to say at this point. He's reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's a must. And actually, what we do is for everyone who hasn't read it, and I'd offer it to the members of this podcast, we've purchased 255 copies of that book for people who haven't read it. I'll buy you a copy, right? So we buy it and give it out to people. It says, we have five for our staff and a box of 250.
Thank you.
To fast forward the story, we got into real estate because I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad when I was 17 in high school. And so we read in high school Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which kind of transformed the way that we looked at life. I didn't want to go work 100 hours a week being an investment banker when I could own these series of houses. So again, went off to school, graduated with six figures in student loan debt.
Oh, that's a big one. So you went to school on the good old-fashioned student loans, which...
My mother's a teacher and my father works for me. I don't come from money, and I made the astute decision to attend a private university, which just racked up my student loans to no end.
Catholic?
Right? Catholic. Oh, yeah. That's exactly right.
Catholic private. Expensive. Right?
So $103,914 student loan debt later, I had to figure out my life. And so kind of what we decided to do was looking at this real estate thing. And so I was a 22-year-old kid with $10,000 to my checking account. That was in 2013 when we bought our first house. And bought a $24,000 house in Indianapolis, which, and you heard that correct, you can still buy houses for the price of a VCR in some Midwestern cities, right? And a used car. So bought this house and and put $8,000 down on my traditional mortgage, and that was our first deal. That house was leased for $650 a month. We closed on it, I'll never forget it, the day before Halloween on 2013.
You still have it?
And we still do today. In fact, we're in the process of selling it for $120,000.
How many times has it paid for itself?
Six or seven, I couldn't tell you, a lot. You can make the luck debate, and you know, we certainly got a good stroke of that on the first one, but we got that first rent check on November 1st, and from there I was addicted. And there's not just some phraseology or some black wizardry that goes on. It's fundamental wealth. And so we saw it happen once, and we had to replicate and recreate that process over and over and over again. So we got, you know, we started with the first deal, saved, and conventionally financed a $24,000 house. And yes, that's possible.
How do you finance a $24,000?
It was goofy. Looking back on it, it's amazing that it worked out.
It was the goofiest thing. We know the mortgage payment was $94 or something. Yeah. Or it was $94, and you know, it's leasing for $650, so it's
It's easy, right? They're like, fish in a barrel. This was the easiest thing. It was 2013. Nobody was buying. It was easy. But I realized really quickly how much we'd have to work to save up to start buying and conventionally financing these other homes. So at the time, we were still living at mom and dad's house. We were landlords living in our parents' house. So
we owned
real estate.
It's okay.
Owned houses.
It's okay.
we're millennials. We can get away with it. So we were living with mom and dad, bought the first house. We actually bought another house we can eventually finance. And we were...
Do you still live with them?
I had to say we graduated from that.
It's only 4 years.
Bought house number one, bought house number two, and then we were out of money. We were living with mom and dad, didn't have two pennies rubbed together, and started knocking down doors looking for private capital. After 270, I know this exact number too, just like the books, 270 people told us no. They wanted nothing to do with this. Capital markets are still scarce. 23-year-old kids didn't know what we were doing.
With a negative net worth, mind you.
Right.
So. Hey, you have some good old student debt.
Right, good old consumer debt. So we had our 271st guy. I'll never forget his name. His name's Jeb. Jeb will likely watch this podcast at some point, so I hope he gets this.
Hey, Jeb.
It's a shout out to Jeb here. But Jeb, brilliant, was some dude I met online on biggerpockets.com. Said, yeah, you seem like you know what you're doing. I'll lend you $30,000. So we took that $30,000, bought a house. I racked up $4,000 or $5,000 on credit card, buying materials, doing the work myself, and refinanced the thing out for like $85,000 the next month, or appraised for $85,000. So we learned very quickly that while there are people, once we had a track record, it's like, okay, this guy doesn't want to lend us money anymore. He wanted to build a portfolio like we were building. So we identified essentially a niche for that service to identify and procure investment opportunity and help build people's portfolios. So one Jeb turned to 10, turned to 20, and now we service everywhere from investors from Stockholm to Sydney to Miami and Seattle.
Yeah, so you're finding them the houses.
Yeah.
Do you guys do all the rehab and everything else?
Everything's in house. What I joke about with Ev is that I'm in real estate because I'm a control freak. And so I want to know every single process of what's going on. So you can, we're kind of, I call it a cafeteria service, right? So you can go in and use us for what you want and leave what you don't, right? So for what we do is we come in and our secret sauce is procuring properties. And so we start there. And if you want us to rehab it for you, if you want to kick your feet up on the beach.
And you do, like when you're doing wholesale, because I know your group.
Yes.
A fantastic group of wholesalers.
Thank you.
You guys are knocking on doors, throwing out tons of advertising, looking for people that might want to be selling their house. You're not waiting for deals, but you're going out.
And that's kind of how, again, going back to that first deal we had to raise money for, but it was we're in a transition period in the market, at least in Indianapolis, where you know we couldn't just log on Zillow and press yes and buy houses anymore. It was getting competitive. And so we had to develop, if we're going to keep our business model moving, we were forced to start that process. So what started off is Evan and I kind of walking by houses and knocking on doors ourselves into today, where we're
which worked in 2014, by the way.
Yeah. To today, where we're spending well in excess of $50,000, sometimes $60,000 a month to procure the inventory we need to make our machine move.
And let's make sure that people actually heard that right. $50,000 to $60,000 a month just in the advertising.
Just in advertising, correct. That's marketing overhead for our company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why you use wholesalers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wholesalers go out and do all that stuff so you don't have to. But
yeah, we're value guys. That's kind of where it starts and stops. If you don't buy the property right, no matter what you're buying, you got to buy the thing right. So we're identifying the value. We're trying to take the heavy lifting out of it and service folks who live, whether you live 20 miles away or 2,000 miles away in San Jose, that's really where our group comes from.
That's really cool. Now, I have to ask you, because everybody's had their share of face plants. You do the scorpion, your legs go up over your head. What's your worst?
I'm going to look at you, man. I know I can tell a story. Yeah, no, this is fine. This is a good one. Really important one. I think it really had us, I guess we earned our stripes early. The first house I ever flipped, I lost $36,000. Didn't help with that $100,000 in student debt that we were still in. But I'll never forget the address. Look it up. 1145 Linden Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46203.
You should know your numbers.
Not to be particular at all. No, not at all. Not at all. I bought the thing for 125 when we were putting 125 into it, and we made the newbie mistake of completely being over leveraged with hard money. Had a couple of contractors walk and so on and so forth. But we realized that, while you're working a 9-to-5 job and you're trying to do a full-on redevelopment of a historically protected property, there's a million things that can go wrong. So,
if I can interject, it's just textbook mismanagement. And I think you can look at any investment you make, and if you're mismanaging it.
Everybody's done what you guys just described. Everybody that's been in real estate for a while has done it.
And I sometimes get, and I think as investors, we get, guilty of this, at least we do, but it's not the first time, and I'm sure it won't be the last.
No, I always say, I better want to have that house in case I have to keep it. We've done that. Even in Vegas in 2008, right, when you had this great marketplace, we did it. We had a roof cave in and destroy everything we just did on the house. And nobody could have predicted it.
Right.
It was just a torrential down.
What happens?
Boom. The rain hits.
Right.
It never hits in Vegas, right? and just and ended up caving in the roof and destroying all the hardwood we just put in and everything else.
You love that. Oops.
Yeah. It's like, love that. It's not as bad. You know, it's one of those things where I still have the house to this day and I'm glad I have it.
Yeah. It's tuition. You know, we knew that this was something it wasn't a hobby. It wasn't a short-term thing. And we know it's an investment. There are inherent risks in every investment. We just understood that. So it was we went out for a margarita after we lost $30,000+. But it was
You were probably had one that offset that too.
Ten times over. Yeah. That's really the name of the game. I mean,
but you dumped the property. Huh? You didn't just want to keep it.
I think tuition's a great word. You know, I always relate stuff back to the student loan thing taught me a lot, and I paid a lot of money for that degree, and this degree took me 1 year to flip that property and cost me only $36,000. It was a year to get done with it. I had contractors walk. I had hard money guys up down my back. It was an interesting situation, but it was just textbook mismanagement.
Attention all real estate investors, business owners, stock traders, and anyone looking to get out of the rat race for good. We all know time is money, but did you know there's a wealth of resources on how to make more money, keep more money, and protect what you've earned all for free online? Anderson Business Advisors YouTube channel offers free resources on asset protection and tax reduction from lawyers and CPAs designed to help you keep more money in your pocket. To learn how to limit your liability, protect what you've earned, and minimize your tax burden all for free, subscribe to Anderson Business Advisors on YouTube today.
What was your hard money at?
12%, 2 points. I can give you the numbers. 12%, 2 points. We borrowed 160 grand. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was a 360 day note. And we closed on day 354 or something like that. So
you had an after repair value that was, were you just estimating higher?
No. If you take it on paper, you just say 125, 125, and I think we sold it for 3.25. Yeah. Well, we would have made plenty of money. But rehab budget swole up.
Yep.
Day, 360 days at 12% interest is a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of got out of control. But again, going back to it now, is what we've been able to do is take that tuition. If you don't apply it, it's meaningless. Right. So you got to find a way to fix that for us. So for the way we kind of took that and said, okay, if we're flipping houses now or we're managing construction projects for other people, how do we fix that? So we have a full-on staff now who's managing day-to-day within a CRM daily operations on the construction side.
It goes exclusively to the point where we have our project manager on staff. I mean, his job is to drive the company truck around and make sure that when someone says cabinets are going in on Monday morning at 8 a.m., cabinets will be there at Monday morning at 8 a.m. So, you know, applying that tuition was clutch because, you know, we were in the city, but we were working our 9-to-5 jobs, and the amount of clients we service that live thousands of miles away and a 4-hour flight away, it's a whole lot different. Makes them feel infinitely better about the ability to invest in it.
What's your communication like with the somebody who buys a property from you? You guys keeping them appraised every step of the way, or are you just giving them once a month? What are you guys kind of doing?
Really, what we don't, I think the better way to answer this is what we don't do. The amount of times that we've sold a property and kind of washed our hands, or I can count on one hand the amount of times we've done that. Really, Aaron is our project manager. He's a tremendous, tremendous resource for our group and particularly for our investors, but he gives every other day, certainly weekly updates. Kind of how we like to focus things is we don't have a buyer's list. We don't have a listings online. You know, we have deep, intimate conversations in a setting just like this with our investors. What are you looking for? How can we hand tailor a solution that achieves both goals, whether it's a new construction home, apartment building, you name it. So a lot of what we do is residential, but it's a constant element of being kept abreast.
You find other things no matter what. Once you're known as a buyer, everybody's going to come in looking for you.
We like investors that let the deal speak to us. You know, we don't buy a rental and shove rental down somebody's throat. You know, we find value, we procure value, and then we add value, and we really let the deal speak to what we do. And what we tell people, Toby, is that we tell people that we want people to be as hands-on or as hands-off as you want. If you want to come in and pick the color of the grout in the guest shower, by all means,
do not do that.
But after we earn your business and earn your trust and you want us to just handle it for you and you want to flip houses while sitting on the beach, that's our goal, to be able to provide that for you.
The worst thing I've ever done is visited the house.
Yeah.
Just don't do it.
Yeah.
Let somebody else pick it for you that's actually like, hey, don't put that in there.
And that goes to what we tell people is whether it's us or in a different market or whatever it may be, but build yourself a team that you can rely on. And I think that speaks to that. If you can't trust your team to pick out tile color and you're trusting them with $200,000 of your money, then we're on different wavelengths already. So that'd be my two cents.
What's the market like in Indy right now? It seems like a lot of folks are going there to try to buy, and you hear good stories, bad stories. You have bad areas of town, good areas of town. What's kind of your favorite thing?
I'd like to eliminate the stereotypes of many of our, I guess, what Indy gets. It's super hot investment-wise. There's no way around it. It's a traditionally cheap market. You can do a lot of damage with $75,000, $100,000. You'd be stunned what $100,000 would get you in Indianapolis. for the most part, population's continuing to grow, jobs are continuing to come in, but the market's super attractive, certainly for folks that have IRA money or just mm-hmm. idle funds sitting in the securities or something. It just,
are you getting appreciation, or is it mostly just cash flow?
Yeah, it's steady, Eddie. I mean, for you know, what I always tell people is that if you go back historically and look at the crash when it occurred, the worst month in Indianapolis was in a zip code 46220, and the dip on the downturn equity-wise was 17%. I'm a numbers guy. I'm a big data guy. I don't let, you know, check me, right?
Freak. I like these guys.
So it's funny to me, but, you know, historically, the worst month in Indianapolis history, maybe, since the Great Depression, went down 17% in value. So we're never going to be a Vegas. We're never going to be a Phoenix, right? But if we're trying to slow, predictable growth, we call it the boring method. Mm-hmm. We want to be boring, and that's what Indianapolis is. We're both recovering Cincinnati Reds fans, and we tell everybody that we use a baseball analogy for everything. You know, we're not trying to hit home runs. Not in Indy. You'll get a stand-up double or something every now and again, but we don't care if we get plunked by a pitch, flare one to right field, or hit a sharp, you know, line drive up the gut. You know, we're just trying to get everybody on base. So try to get first base, and that's what we're constantly pushing.
All right, since you guys throw a baseball out there, across the street we have the Aviators having their
I saw game. That, yeah.
It's their little
it's opening night tonight.
This is opening night.
All right.
I think tomorrow's the second game, so tonight's the first.
There you go.
They just built that thing like a year.
No kidding.
It's just a complete aside. But if you're going to talk to somebody who's just getting into baseball, so they're just getting into real estate, what would you tell them?
I think it's important to know the game. You know, I think it's important to much like when you're getting into real estate, I think it's important to, you know, turn on the TV, watch the Reds. Don't watch the Reds. Watch the Aviators. You know, you got to know the game you're playing before you can effectively be good at it. So, you know, crunching numbers, understanding deals, understanding markets, you know, the amount of investors who have had success with us are oftentimes folks who maybe faltered with their first deal. You know, people that now they really know what they're getting themselves into, and they understand this is an appropriate measure to mm-hmm. take to be effective. So turn on the TV. I guess that's the best.
Yeah, and maybe continuing down that metaphor is, don't be afraid to swing the bat. I mean, so many people come up and they've got their money and they've done all the research, and you know. Right, and they see the pitch coming and they just kind of freeze. You know, there's some point you have to swing and just kind of go for it. So our successful investors are exactly that, people who are intelligent and, you know, they're looking for the right team to build themselves around, and we provide the rest.
Now, would you guys be considered millennials?
Yes, absolutely. So, yeah, right?
All right. So the millennials, here's the rub on the millennials, is they're not buying houses, they're renting. Rents have been going up, the home ownership's been kind of declining. What would you tell somebody who's in high school? We'll take it into high school. So we'll say you're in high school and you're going up and you're talking about their future, and my personal belief that the millennials can't buy houses because they have so much student debt.
Right.
It's more than credit card debt now. It's just 1.5 trillion.
I don't think it's just your belief, Toby. I think we're all on the same page.
Well, all right. So what would you tell that high school?
Yeah. You know, it's tough. We're in a society, you know, I'm guilty of it. I have a finance, we both have finance and economics degrees that, you know, by all definitions were overpriced. I wouldn't take my time back at college forever, but it's an overpriced 4 years apart, you know. I would tell people to understand the society you're in and ask questions. You know, our corporate motto, we've got a big wall in our office that says, ask why. And we encourage every investor, every client, every employee to always have that kind of question mark in the back of your head, not just to be rebellious, but to better understand, you know, what that's going to look like. So my advice to an 18-year-old or 17-year-old getting ready to head that direction is, you know, why do you need a degree? Why do you need that? If you are going to take it on, what's the return? You know, things like that. Very, very rudimentary ways of looking at it, but don't just blindly follow.
Economics degree's not bad, guys. English degree, I get, like, I majored in Spanish. I'm like, all right.
Finance or interpretive dance, I went with finance.
Yeah. I always look at this, thank God for those degrees, because they subsidize all the engineers.
Right. and Toby, if I can add something else, maybe on a more tangible level, something that we're really passionate about, we actually have a nonprofit that we're working for right now that is all about implementing financial education in high schools. The fact that we we're passionate about it. It's what I wake up thinking about and quite frankly go to bed thinking about. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the fact that we can graduate high school now and not know what a credit score is, but we know darn well what chlorophyll is. You know, why? It's always troubling me. So
what is chlorophyll?
I don't know.
I think I failed that.
But anyway, so that's what we're passionate about. So I guess on a more tangible level, even if you are graduating with debt, mm-hmm. or you are planning on going to college, understand that there are several methodologies in this fine place that we occupy called Earth that can lead you down the path of either financial independence or just wealth generation.
So you guys set up a nonprofit that you do education for high school?
Correct.
You're like talking to the choir here. Lots of people out here too. We always say it's like rich folks always end up with a nonprofit.
Sure.
If you follow some of the, like,
my philosophy. But think of Andrew Carnegie and the Gospel of Wealth.
Yes.
Like your job is to be
fantastic book. Yes. Yeah. That's really what it is. We just got done speaking at the University of Indianapolis, ironically, last week, these potential college students. And, you know, we're essentially, we went up there and just said, you know, how many folks in here can tell me what this element on the periodic table is? And everybody's hands up. And then how many people here can effectively balance a checkbook? And a bunch of blank
it's
stares.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. A bunch
we
of blank
don't
stares.
Use checkbooks.
Yeah, right. Yeah, hop on the app.
Apple Pay.
Right. Yeah. You know, that's startling. And really, you know, again, it's my advice to a 16-year-old old kid would be exactly that. Just, Ask why.
That's actually good. You guys have had super success.
Yeah,
super well thought of.
I'm trying. Thank you.
Giving back.
Yeah, it's
kudos to you both.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah. If you guys couldn't tell, they're twins.
Identicals like come, baby. That's exactly right.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Appreciate
thanks
it,
for
guys.
Joining us. I'm going to put your information up on the site if you guys are okay with it.
Please do.
All right. Fantastic.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.